The signal you are receiving is coming from deep inside of FEMA Region 1, well within the battle lines of the municipal corporation known as the Commonwealth of Taxachusetts. Radiating out to the darkest corners of Al Gore's internet from our secret broadcast bunker, cleverly disguised as a middle-class living room, this is Red Pill Politics. Howdy there, patriots and socialist distancers. Welcome to your second dose of Red Pill Politics, hour two, kicking off here right now. If you are out there in radio world and you would like to call in, the lines are open, 512-248-8252, 512-248-8252. Feel free to call in and see what's on your mind. I know I am nervous about what Biden might possibly try to set into motion in terms of executive fiat, his executive orders that he's been threatening. You know, look at the last one that he put out on climate change, and you'll know what I mean. All right, what could be coming our way? Well, I don't think anything good. I have decided, and I think I'm right here, that Henry Kissinger nailed it. He really nailed it, and we're living it right now. He has said, and I mentioned this on the show before, he pointed out that you control the world if you control the money, you control nations if you control the energy, and you control the people if you control the food. And right now, as sure as I am sitting here, as sure as you are hearing my voice, all three of those things are under attack in this country right now. You can't think about global economic attack without thinking of Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. Right? They've now struck in a deal with the UN. They're marching forward on that. They claim a new reset is the only thing that will save our asses. All right, and they've come out and told us what that entails. Energy, is it possible that they might be attacking our energy? Well, I don't know. What kind of activity is circling around the Biden administration with respect to the movement of oil? All right, it's under direct attack. The food, we think we've got it tough right now. Oh, maybe we'll have to live with some high prices for a little while longer, you say. Folks, you are eating the food from last year's harvest. You haven't felt nothing yet. This is nothing. I mean, granted, the farmers have been under attack for a long time. I don't want you to misunderstand me on that. But this current, in-your-face shutdown of that industry is unprecedented. And the impacts of it, it's like when I was talking about Daisy World, how sometimes the visible and measurable impact of your alteration doesn't always manifest right away. Sometimes it takes time. This is one of those. It takes a little bit of time. Price of food is going up for obvious reasons. But you wait till next year when there's almost no food for the price to go up on. And how much will that be? You're not going to be in the habit of walking into the stores and being super selective. Do I want brand name Twinkies or do I want the cheap Walmart brand? That ain't what you're going to get. You don't realize what's coming. there's going to be severe shortages. Prices are going to go up. You know, your days of bitching about prices are only just started. And the only thing that's going to drown out all your complaining about the price of food is, good God Almighty, there is no food. That will drown that whining out pretty quick. I don't know, I'm getting going again. This always ticks me off when I talk about this. I seem to see it clear as a bell, yet I struggle to make regular, you know, other common sense people see the severity of this, the urgency of it. Maybe it's just me. Let's take a call, find out. Andy from Texas, is it just me?
You're spot on. I wanted to call you last week, but I think that was a taped tape show, was it?
I wasn't able to make that one, but glad to have you on there this week.
Well, let me tell you, though, last week, the only reason I wanted to call up and tried to call up was to tell you, hey, don't change a thing. You were spot on. You're spot on again tonight, David. You just got it going on. But as far as this food thing goes, yeah, you're right. People are not going to realize until next year. I mean, they're going to realize some prices going up because products can't be made, because some of the products that hit your shelf do come from the spring harvest and whatnot. But your vegetables are going to disappear, and your strawberries are going to go up, and everything's going to go up, and the scarcity is going to be there. And we got to realize we're trying to feed well over 350 million people in this country, and the food is gone. But here's the question that I want to ask you. Who's the biggest murderer of all time in the world?
Oh, geez, that'd be a hard one to calculate, but what's going on right now with this whole vaccine thing, you want to talk about lag effects, we're not going to see the full ramifications of the death toll on this for years to come. And there's going to be so much plausible deniability built in around it that it's going to be a he said, she said thing by the looks. But, I mean, they've gone after our food supply in this whole pandemic thing. There's two bioweapons, the virus, if it can be isolated, and the shot that followed. So I'd have to say the characters involved in that.
Well, what I was getting at was democide. If you look throughout the entire 1900s, all the way through the 20th century there, the biggest killer of all people was government. Democide, yeah. Death by government.
Exactly.
276 million people starved to death. This is nothing new. What they're doing, they did in Russia. What they're doing, they did in China. What they're doing, they did in other communist countries. What they're doing right now is just communist 101 right now. They're going to starve us out. They destroyed over 100 food processing plants, and that goes with the chicken farms or chicken egg farms or cattle and whatnot. They've done this. And we're not going to see it until next year, but we're going to see the prices. And this is going to be horrible, Dave. This is going to be something unlike America has ever seen in its life. You think 1929, the stock market crash and the Dust Bowl, you thought that was terrible? Wait till you see what's coming up. And we got a whole bunch of vaccinated people on top of it who need special care, and the medical system can't keep up with it. A lot of the medical system won't even treat you. I watched a video today of some woman who came in and said, look, I'm having a cardiac thing going on here. I have shortness of breath. My heart is not working right. I need an EKG so you can see what's going on. And the doctor just kind of looked at her and said, so you're the doctor now, huh? Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to give you an EKG, but it's only because you requested it. This is pathetic. You know, I spent 9 days in the hospital last September, and those people put me on all kinds of different drugs just because my age bracket said that I needed those things. People in your age bracket generally need this stuff.
It's protocol-driven health. You fall into, they quickly try to find some category, some insurance code that you fit into so that they can assign a protocol. And then it's just like making sausage. You just go through and you talk to a specialist and this, that, and the other. When, you know, what you need is a good doctor that'll sit down, talk to you, study your condition, and then relieve the suffering. Right now, we fall into a protocol, and we're categorized by insurance codes, and that's the way our healthcare system is. When you're processed like a number, it's like, you know, beef walking along the line. You get your ear tattooed, you get a shot of antibiotics, and pushed out the other end of the gate. And it's pretty much where we're at with our own human healthcare system. And that's the productive years. The older folks, you're probably going to see diminishing quality. And the younger people, if you're lucky enough to live, all right, they're going to quickly get you to those productive years. And you know, your health insurance, your health coverage will be dictated by, you know, how useful the government finds you.
Well, but, I mean, when we start talking about the food supply, I mean, they're already introducing. People need to take a look at their ingredients on their new chips that they're buying, you know, these new jalapeno-flavored chips. So, you know, look on the back, and you're going to find cricket protein, things like that. They're gonna put us on these bugs whether we want to be on them or not. And they're already starting. Bill Gates is well into his farmland is basically going to be raising crickets and all the garbage we don't want to eat. Here's something I want to throw at you, though. Just because they bought all this property up with all this fiat currency, and we know it's a fraud. The currency is a fraud. The money is a fraud. But just because we valued it and we took your flipping money and we sold you your property, you know what? You don't own it. Because when that crap hits the fan, we are going to go take that farmland and we're going to start, you know, processing it again, whether it's just a small garden to help the neighborhood or it's a big garden to help the entire country. We got to take it back. These guys are getting everything from fraud. None of this. This was all perpetrated from Richard Nixon finally taking us off of the gold standard in 71, the rest of the way off the gold standard. 33 took us three quarters of the way, and this knucklehead in 71 took us the rest of the way off. And that opened it up for all these billionaires, which was their plan. And all these billionaires, it turns out everybody who can be a billionaire in this country has to be a villain. And they are. Every billionaire, give or take a couple of people who have made some honest billions that I know they're contributing to places like RBN and InfoWars and stuff. But most every person who became a billionaire had permission from their callers, the Ashkenazis, said, yeah, you can do it, but you got to follow our protocol. And that's what's going on. So that you can totally see this was a total manufactured process here. They took us off the gold standard, so it became fiat currency. So, and then when we got on computers, we didn't even have to worry about them making money. All we had to worry about is these evil people who they already put in the press that they were billionaires, Microsoft, Dr. Fauci, all these different billionaires, George Soros. They just told us they were billionaires, but they're just putting money on their books like nothing before. Why?
Yeah, because some of these billionaires, though, they did not get to where they are by innovation, by inventors and hard workers. They got there by chance and corruption. Now, I'm not against businesses being big, people having millions or even billions of dollars, as long as that it was free market forces that brought that about. Because for them to have that kind of money means that there must be a lot of people beneath them who are experiencing benefits of that as well. Because a good business will grow naturally. The economic forces, the winds will be in their sail if it's done naturally and with competition. And it's the competition that will keep the prices low. Otherwise, it becomes a monopoly. But as long as those conditions exist where competition, healthy competition can be there, you know, I don't mind businesses being big. But the George Soros types, they got to a point where, man, it for them personally, it's not about money anymore. Money is just a means to control. It's about
George Soros, his monopoly is on prosecutors, judges, and politicians, and feeding that caravan of people coming up from the southern border. He's got a mission. But remember, back in the '80s or the early '90s,
it's not about any of those people. is not about any of those people that you mentioned. They are a vehicle to weaken our nation to bring about some endpoint. What's the final endpoint? He doesn't want all of South America to empty into the United States, you know, just because. He wants them to empty in here to bankrupt the country from within and be able to bring about civil unrest, because they believe that revolutionary change is the only way they're going to do this. That, and they're right, because they won't be legislated and regulated in a place, because we the people wouldn't tolerate it. So they've got to do it through chaos and revolution, is bring about this change and kill the enemy.
So the million-dollar question, Dave, will America stand up? And if we do stand up, will it be too late? Because it's really almost too late now. We've got to get winter crops put in very shortly. I mean, in August, we put in winter crops for the fall and stuff like that. If we don't get a grip on what's going on in this country, not only will this spring's harvest and this winter harvest not come through, but we're going to have zombies everywhere. And they're not really zombies. They're just hungry people. Yeah. And they're going to want to take what you have and what I have, and I don't have much. I'm going to probably be a zombie at some point because I'm not that well adverse. I've been the guy running around trying to alert people to what's going on, not paying attention to my own flipping world and getting myself set up in a spot where I could survive. So I'm guessing my job in this world, because I happen to be here at this particular time, which is a weird time, but I happen to be here. And I'm not sure. I mean, I got to lay it on the line and say, you know, whoever the creator is, he's going to do something for me. But I spent my entire last 8.5, 9 years running around the country, talking to people, telling people what's going on and getting kicked in the ass and getting a few people that really, really, you know, embraced it and said, yeah, I get it. I understand. You know, and then, I don't know. It's just, Dave, did you ever think for 1 minute you would live in a world that was going to come to an end like this? Other than the fact when you finally came into clues of what was going on, but just living your life until you figured out something was wrong, did you ever think it would come to this point?
It seemed like it was on that path. You know, right now, I don't know how much, you know, time we have left before things actually start to you know, go into unrest in the cities, but, you know, persistence, there's something to be said for that. That, you know, like yourself, you've been out there for years. I have too. I mean, I can go back and dig up lectures, you know, 10, 12 years old, where I was out there just sounding the alarm about Agenda 21. And I was doing it at a time when I knew I was guaranteed my most common response was that I was a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist. All right, classic.
And you don't know nothing.
Now, and that did happen. However, I get up, lick my wounds, say, you know, they didn't get it. But, you know, if one person in that room left scratching their head and looking a little bit more, I validated that myself just so I get up and do it again. Now, years down the road, I now have the ear of a lot of people, and I keep having folks coming back to me and saying, Dave, you know what? You were right. And one of them, and there's one person whose approach to me I very much treasured. An older guy, he was an old Marine, a classic, old, thick-skinned, tough Marine. And he, right up from day one, didn't really like me too much, all right, because I had an earring, tattoos, long hair, you know, all those things that a classic conservative Marine really wouldn't take to. And I was harping about Agenda 21. He was one of those people that called me a conspiracy theorist and had no place in the Republican Party. A few years went by, and he was singing a new tune. I would send him some information and say, here you go, this is in your backyard, what do you think? All right, we'll talk about more after this break. We got a quick break coming up here. It's Red Pill Politics, and you're listening to Republic Broadcasting Now.
Well, you might not sing a bit like Elvis. radio. For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Back. All right, folks, we are kicking around a few thoughts and ideas here about how much time we've got left to get up off our hands here. Andy from Texas called in here. He's been out there for a long time. I've been out there for a long time. And I guess before I kick back to you, Andy, to get a comment, I feel your frustration, brother. Believe me, I do. And I don't know, you know, we ran out of the luxury of time, but I don't know when that point is going to be, when there's a flare-up that is a significant enough spark to become a national movement, because that's what it's going to take. But on the other side, speaking to your persistence and stick-to-itiveness, never die, man. Never say, never quit. Is that longevity and the consistency of your message that people, even if they rejected it years ago, I think there's a significant number of them that are going to remember you were there, that you were sounding the alarm, and you knew. And in a moment of desperation, when things do really degrade beyond anything that they can sugarcoat, they're probably going to come back out and search for us, hoping that we have some insight in how to handle it right now, too. All right, they may not have believed us right up front. It took years for people to come around from the point where your average person who used to just call me a conspiracy theorist to the point where I had elected officials seeking my advice and my review of certain policies with, you know, specifically because of my knowledge of Agenda 21. So I think we need to be persistent and never quit, because that's what they want. But I don't know, what's that time? What do you think is the breaking point? Is it going to be this winter, or is it going to be next year? Because I know the food crunch, Andy, has not hit us yet. All right, it's like we can smell the smell coming from the kitchen in the form of really high prices that I think are going to get higher until we're distracted with flat-out scarcity. But what do you think?
Well, hey, Dave, I'll tell you this. Nobody really thinks about food until they're hungry. Okay? So, and then we all go to our kitchen, or we end up at a restaurant or whatever, and we get something to eat. So when those things are gone, okay, the restaurant... Now, the restaurants probably won't go away. You'll have Cricket Burgers before they go away. Burger King, McDonald's, they'll have Cricket Burgers, and there'll be the new thing, and this and that and the other and whatnot. But when real food is gone, this stuff that we're normally used to eating and stuff, that's when you're going to see the turmoil. And I see that coming. They're hoping, because they did blow up well over 100 food processing plants just here in the United States, mm-hmm. which means that next year's food supply is going to be relatively slim. But when this happens, when people can't get the food they want, think about, okay, just for myself, I ate all my staple stuff. You know, I like to buy these little pound cakes. It's gone. I like to buy some cookies. It's gone. All the little stuff that I like to eat, popcorn, is gone. Even in the stores, it's gone around the neighborhood I got. You can't buy no microwave popcorn to save your life or whatever. Just regular little staples are going away, and people are going to have to, you know, molt themselves down to a more, you know, whatever you got going on left, you know, and that's where I'm at in life. I mean, I have to eat out of cans now until I catch some more money, and then I can go buy something else. Well, can I afford anything at that point? That's my big thing here, is inflation is going off crazy. When will I be able to buy some more food? Well, certainly when I get some money, but that money's not going near as far as it used to go. And, you know, my wages haven't gone up. And so, yeah, so I'm just going to be in a pickle here. And so is so many other people. But my thing here is that, no, in my entire life, and I owned a fence and deck company, I owned a bar, and I owned a DJ company, and I made tons of money. And I'll tell you straight up, and I'm not saying this to toot my own horn, I spent more money on other people than I spent on myself. That includes my family, by the way, but most of my friends and stuff. I was a coach for junior football, basketball, AAU basketball, YMCA. I was just the guy who was part of the community, and he had money, and he flaunted it with these people to share, and I helped a lot of people out. And so I'm not looking for any blessing or anybody to clap their hands for me or anything. I'm just saying that's what somebody should do when they do have money. But you see all these people who do have money, who claim to be saving the people in Africa from starvation while they're killing them with polio vaccines and other vaccines and stuff. All these people who are getting this great image of being great philanthropists, yeah, I screwed that up, but they're all getting all this credit for being these great people when they're in fact destroying people's lives. And the biggest problem we have is information. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear what I have to say. Like I told you, I've been around the country for the last 8 years. I got with the floor guy. I went around the country doing floors for buckle stores all over these malls and stuff. I got to see and talk to a whole lot of people. And I got to, the ones that I got to talk to that actually entertained my conversation, I'd like to think that I helped them. But the ones who just kind of blew you off and stuff, well, I'd like to think that I put a little message in their head, and now that they see things are going wrong, that helped them too. That's all I got to go on is that, oh, I might have helped some people. That's a real, real thin line, but, you know, you have to have trust in your own God. You have to have trust in your Creator, and you have to believe that what you're doing here right now is what you're supposed to be doing here right now, and that seems to be where I'm at.
Yeah, I believe that we're all in the positions we are for a reason. And if you're, you know, myself, I'm a believer, and I try to, you know, I really do look at every decision in life is a fork in the road, and, you know, one is the preferred path. All right, one's right, one is wrong. Sometimes one's not even wrong. Sometimes one is better than the other. But life is just a bunch of decisions, and I try to make those decisions in a way that's in line with my faith, all right? You know, I'm not all about self. I do give a lot of my time. You know, like I said, I would prefer to be out fishing and hunting and things like that.
Oh, not absolutely.
I never thought I'd be on the radio doing live streaming and public speaking. This was not me. You go back 25, 30 years ago, it was the farthest thing from my mind, but having kids will unscrew a person and get them reprioritizing. And I woke up to certain things. I went down a rat hole and then found, you know, holy mackerel. Oh, what in the heck have I been believing? And, you know, it changes a person. But, you know, this has been an evolution. It's a miracle that you and I are here to live through it right now. To be honest with you, this has been playing out for generations.
Well, and that's weird that you should say that. You know, I had a stepdad who liked to get drunk and toss me around the house and stuff. And one time he smashed my head in the fridge and tossed me in the corner head first. And after that, I was never the same kid again. I used to have migraine headaches. But then I had an epiphany that I really didn't pay attention to. I was like, wow. This is, I mean, I literally got outside of my body when I thought this. And this is like at 12 years old. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm going to see the end of this. Something just came to me that I'm going to see the end of this. And now we're living what I actually, I didn't foresee any of this. There's no visions in my head. I just realized that, wait, this can't go on for whatever reason. And the bummer is that I wasn't here as a founding father to help put this stuff together, because I really think I could have helped there. The problem is I was born into what is already here, and it progressed to this point. And being just a single person, I mean, I couldn't get up on a pedestal and change any of it because I didn't know any of it was going wrong. I thought life was life. We're just going to live here, eat, drink, be merry, go play golf, do whatever you do along the way. You retire, and then, yeah, you die. Okay, cool. Whatever that is, that's what I thought I was going to get. No, that's not the way it's planning out for me here. You know, I'm pushing 60 here. And I'm not looking forward to retirement. I'm not looking forward to getting any Social Security. I'm not looking forward to anything other than the fact that I'm going to have to fight somebody here shortly just to stay free, just to stay who I am and live my life the way I choose to live it. Now, did I choose to live the way I'm living? No. They put me on this path when I found out something was wrong in this world, and then I pursued it, and I thought, you know what? They're screwing me here in Washington State with all these laws and stuff they're trying to bring down on me. I'm leaving. And then I found my way to Texas. And I haven't been in problems with the law ever since. And I don't plan on being on with it. But I'll tell you what, if they come for me, they got something to reckon with. And everybody should have that attitude. Look, we're not here for the government satisfaction. We're here for our own satisfaction. I don't believe I'm here to be ruled. Think about anarchy, all right? Everybody, it's been demonized on the TV. Anarchy is, oh, these people are like, well, look at BLM, look at Antifa. They're calling that anarchy in many respects there. No, that's not anarchy. Anarchy is govern yourself. And you usually use the same kind of commandments, such as the Ten Commandments, when you're doing anarchy. Harm nobody and harm nobody's property, and you've done nothing wrong. Leave me alone. Am I right?
You know, I would argue this point because I've always viewed anarchy as being equally as dangerous as total government. You know, very rarely are the extremes of anything the way to go. And you have total government on one end of the spectrum and anarchy on the other. And anarchy being what it is, it attracts like a moth to a flame people who will call themselves anarchist. Just like you have people that will dress up and call themselves Trump supporters, you have people that will dress up and call themselves anarchist just to be able to lead an ungoverned life, and they don't believe in these couple of principles that you stated either about do no harm and not steal from people. Because I've seen this in action where people showed up in New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project and called themselves anarchists. And as soon as, you know, any two or three of them get together and realize that they can pillage their neighbor's property and stuff, I mean, they did. And I've got some friends of mine that are really awesome people who call themselves anarchists, probably do live by those non-aggression principles. But again, if you ask a room full of anarchists what anarchy is, they'll give you all the different definitions. And it's receptive to being infiltrated by people that don't subscribe to those non-aggression principles at all. So, you know, I'm not sold on anarchy.
Picture of anarchy. Yeah, as opposed to what anarchy really means. Look, okay, so then what is the word? What is the government? What I want is no government. That's the way I feel. Look, government brings us to war. Government's been responsible for 276 million deaths without the wars that we've had. That's them killing their own people. With the wars, we're up over 300 some odd million people that government has killed. So, I mean, anarchy, whatever. Call it whatever you want. I just want to live my life, and I have no intentions of harming anybody. But that's not the sentiment for everybody on this planet. I mean, if you went to anarchy, no government, no police, no nothing, this and that and the other, you would have those elements that would just act out, oh, well, we're free to do what we want. It'd be like a purge or something. They can kill whoever they want. But guess what? Anarchy would put an end to that, simply because...
See, I can't give them a free pass on this. Government's sole responsibility is to have just enough authority to protect all those liberties that you just stated that you wanted. So it's not a problem that we have government. It's that the government that we have is not living within the constitutional limits that it's supposed to.
If breach of contract.
If it only did those things, then your liberties and your constitutional freedoms and they would all be intact, because government's total focus would be on that, not on educating your kids about gender in the classrooms, not about buying up land for preservation, not about controlling health industries and oil industries. These are all exceedances where government's gotten beyond. So it's too important of a job. We need just enough to secure our liberties and no more. We've just let what was laid out for us get carried away.
Well, I'll leave it with this, Dave, because it sounds like you got another caller coming in. Let me leave it at this. If we had actual people who loved our country and ran for office, and we had 535 people in the Congress that really cared about their country, and we had a president that really cared about our country, I wouldn't have a problem with government whatsoever at all. But the problem is we can't weed out the tyrants. The tyrants are getting into government, and it's through thrifty voting machines and stuff, and they put everybody in there that they need to get done what they're doing right now. And that's why anarchy looks really good to me. For lack of a better word, perhaps anarchy is not the word that I'm trying to describe here, but I just want to live my life and be able to purchase food and be able to work and make the money to purchase that food and drive my car and this, that, and the other. And these are things they don't want us to do anymore. In fact, they're going to try to make us...
Call it nullification, and then I'll be right on board with you.
There you go, Chief. All right, you have a good night, Dave. Thanks. Hey, call in tomorrow on Republic of Texas Radio. I'd like to hear you.
Yeah, I think I will. I'll get up, set the alarm, be up fresh and early in the morning.
Do that, Dave. Appreciate it, bro. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks for the call. See, Ned, we were pretty close there. He was hovering around anarchy and And I say, well, I think we need a little government, and I think nullification, that would be a good middle ground. It would satisfy the anarchist in people, is that, no, I am not going to succumb and consent to your tyranny. Right? That's the way to handle that, is just fail to recognize it. We got a caller from Kentucky. Mike, how are you this evening?
I'm kind of missing, you got onto the topic there that, a little bit of it anyway, we're kind of missed from Rural Survival Show, the Tim and Lori Spencer and crew talking about things like sprouting and how much grain you can buy, all kinds of neat seeds and stuff that you can sprout, and if you've got just a large south-facing window, there's even people that are doing it as a business with microgreens and selling it, but and you can feed yourself with that. You can. I know a guy, I've toured his garden. He's got he got a hold of, and he had to put a lot of work into it. He got a hold of the plastic cubes and cut the top off of them like they use for the dye that dyes mulch. But, I mean, there's other products that are put in those plastic cubes. I've seen a lot of people take them with the cage still on them, and they'll cut the top off of them and use them for a garbage receptacle. But those things, where they're opaque white plastic, here in Kentucky, you can have soil temperatures into your 70s to plant plants in late February or early March. So you can get a really early start on the growing season. Nice. You make a greenhouse top for that, and with, you know, a concealed area in a city, like a small, say, I don't know, 30 by 30 lot that is kind of covert, and maybe with a south-facing brick wall, you could paint that silver, and when the angle of the sun is low in the sky, you can get a lot of heat in your soil boxes. You put a lot of sand in the bottom and leave the drain open on those things, and he used foil of some sort with holes in it and put his plants that he sprouted indoors in there in late February, early March, and he had, you know, what do you call it, indeterminate potatoes, where you just, you know, harvest the potatoes you need out of there, and the dang potato plant just keeps on growing. And I think there's tomato plants that are that way, too. I grew some one summer here in Kentucky in a shady area called a tree tomato or a German tomato. Has a big kind of teardrop-shaped leaves on it, and it was going to frost on Thanksgiving Day or the eve of Thanksgiving. I went out there and picked all the green tomatoes and kept them in the fridge. I had my last garden-grown tomato on New Year's Eve. Everybody else went to a watch night service, and I had pulled that green tomato out like a day or two before and put it in a paper bag and in a south-facing window, and it got red ripe enough to have a tomato and cheese sandwich on New Year's Eve. So,
yeah, as long as they start to get a little bit white, when you look at the top of the tomato when it's green, and you'll see it start to get white up on the top, then at that point, you should be able to ripen it. But you know what I got into recently, or started to reinvestigate, because I got into it before, is mushrooms.
Yeah, if you can tolerate mushrooms. I mean, some people have a deadly allergic reaction to various types of mushrooms.
Yeah, you do have to be careful and make sure you know what you have. But even then, you can't eat mushrooms more than 3 days in a row because it is a nutrient-dense thing. But it's one of those crops that, you know, once you get doing it, you can produce enough for yourself and then some. It's a nutrient-dense food, and you can do it in any damp, dark place. It's fine.
Well, here in Kentucky, you can, and, of course, you have to be careful because they want you to get a farm facility ID number now. And so I know somebody went and bought some chicken stuff at a feed store. Chicken supplies at a feed store, and they got a letter in the mail. All they had was, they don't even, you know, they just have like a subdivision house or trailer and not even a half an acre of land. And the Department of Agriculture wanted them to get a farm facility ID number to apply for just because they bought some chicken supplies at Southern States, I think it was. and they used their credit card or something, so they identified their address.
No kidding.
And once you get that attached to your property, you can't get rid of it.
Yeah. You know, something I've been against, because they were pushing this right to farm bylaw around here. And I said, you know, there's something that's not right about this. And I kept digging and digging, you know, and certainly there's not, because you really already have that right. And in every case...
Well, in Kentucky, from what I understand, there's old laws that are still on the books that say that you cannot be kicked off your land, like for a sheriff's tax sale. If you have, you know, and that's another reason to try to do year-round farming, is because the law says, you know, if you can't pay your taxes or whatever on your land, and they're going to do an auction to sell off your land, in Kentucky you cannot be kicked off your land until your crops come in. And that, you know, typically that might mean corn or and I was going to mention that, you mentioned popcorn, but... If you're doing year round gardening, every time a sheriff shows up, he's like, "Well, I've still got potatoes coming in. I've still got, you know, I've still got this or that coming in." And every time he shows up, you know, you still got that. And it, you know, if he's your friend, he might say, "Oh, okay, I'll just put that on the form. Still got crops coming in." Because some of these old laws, you know, you can kind of work the system like that. But you know, you were mentioning your microwave popcorn, huh?
Experience in conservation and dealing with these characters is labeling. So if you have, like I mentioned, the right to farm bylaw, okay, well, it sounds good. It's like you're protecting all those farmers and their right to be farmers. Well, it requires that you define what a farmer is and is not. So now we're left with a situation where it most recently here, right, and it could have changed since the last time I reviewed this, but a farm had to be 10 acres or more.
Yeah.
And there was a certain dollar amount that you had to make on your farm. And they also said, well, these are what we consider to be farm livestock. So there's certain animals that you might want to raise on your farm that they don't even consider livestock. But
well, in these container gardens and like you were talking about mushrooms and shiitake mushrooms in Kentucky, you can have a money-making crop of those, like on an old shaded road or something with these stacks of logs. Once you fumigate the logs and kill all the other fungus you don't want growing, then you seed them, you'll have a crop for years until your stack of logs rots down. They typically, what I've seen is they'll stack them in almost like a log cabin pyramid shape.
There's a whole bunch of ways. In fact, there's one, and it happened on one of my properties up in New Hampshire, is it got into the wood chips. We had wood chips that were all over the place, and now the little wine caps, twice a year, they come up by the pailful. And if you look underneath, just scratch beneath the surface of the wood chips and dig into them a little, there's a vast network of that, what do they call it, the microcilium or something like that. I can't remember the term now.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's super important in breaking down the lignin, that stuff that makes woody things woody, because there's wonderful nutrients inside that. So it turns out this is a great integrated crop in areas where you can grow something that's a perennial, something that comes up year after year, and then mix into it the wood chip mulch and these mushrooms, and they kind of work hand in hand. As the mushrooms put out their network, they're, you know, fertilizing everything in its area.
Well, another thing you can do is what's called biochar, because, you know, I guess you've seen all the stories about, you know, fertilizer costs tripling, and some farmers decided not to even raise a crop this year. And then you combine that with, in 2019 when Trump started the trade war with China, by coincidence there were bomb cyclones that went across the breadbasket, like three of them, and I heard there was close to 1 million livestock animals destroyed or missing, and 11.5 billion bushels of grain was inundated or ruined, or what they call... there's a name for it. Because the bottom of the silo got wet, the whole silo had to be declared no good because of mold and fungus. And so I don't think we've ever recovered from that. China lost a huge amount of pigs, and then they also lost pigs due to the swine flu, which I thought was kind of crazy because in spring of 2019, they destroyed 1 million pounds of pork being imported into New Jersey because it had swine flu somehow and tested positive for it. And so what the heck? I know somebody that works for a processing plant over here in Grayson. They have changed the tax structure to where if they cut the pig in half and don't cut it down to pork chops and, you know, fine cuts, the import tariff into China is only like 6% instead of 14% or something like that. So they've developed these freezers so they can freeze the carcasses of the kind of field-dressed pork and import them cheaper into China. So we're importing, we're exporting at the same time we're importing the same dang products.
Yeah.
From China. What is that about unless it's just simply about making the trade imbalance with China look better? So the government's been playing these bookkeeping tricks, I think, for quite some time. And that's why I strongly suspect for several years, well, better part of 25 years, actually, that they're trying to do, and Clinton got blamed for it, Gore got blamed for it, the environmentalists, lefties get blamed for it, but the Republicans are doing it too. They're trying to monetize our land by declaring it as a, you know, wildlands area, and then it becomes a surety that the IMF can loan money to D.C. and the local areas, like here in eastern Kentucky, Hal Rogers and Mitch McConnell want to do that.
Now, people don't even realize that the globalists, at the international level, that they're trading in SDRs, right? And that's what you're talking about, is our land, our actual farmland, is collateral to the World Bank and the IMF for trade in their SDRs.
Well, it allows this perpetual debt spending spree that's D.C. to continue so that they can buy votes. You know, they can get the guns and the butter. You know, if you remember economics class where the economics of government, basically you either get guns or butter, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when the Democrats in, they're always about pandering to those that want more butter. When the Republicans are in, they're the ones that are the war party or whatever funding the military-industrial complex. But they're both playing the same game, and it's just keeping us at each other while they pick our pockets.
Yeah,
and then they're doing these mechanisms with the IMF and running people off of rural areas because we could be more rugged and independent and less dependent on government. I think Jefferson said that.
We've got to just go back and repopulate and put into production. We can't wilt and just let ourselves starve, because it is going to come to that where the government is going to say, well, we control all this land. You can't grow crops there. We got to go grow crops there. We got to go actually cut down those trees and probably heat ourselves and just do it.
There was an assistant professor at UC Berkeley a couple of years ago that caused a big stink because he said, people that live in rural America have made bad choices and they're bad people and it shouldn't be easy to live in rural America. We should be taxing them and making it more expensive to live in rural America. Where did he get these ideas? It was incubated at Berkeley. And he, you know, they wanted, you know, 20 years of Jerry Springer and Beverly Hillbillies and Hee Haw and stuff. They're demonizing or foo-fooing, making fun of, you know, the Green Acres dumb country bumpkin idiots.
Nancy Pelosi brought Agenda 21 directly back into California. You know, there's early congressional footage of her trying to get Agenda 21 passed right on the floor of Congress. All right.
Now, well, you can certainly find the maps where these dreamers want these wild land corridors, and they go right through eastern Kentucky. And here it is, 2022. We've had over 80 years of funding, and everybody that studied Vietnam knows about Operation Popeye. The CIA admitted to that in the process of saying, no, we've not done any cloud seeding except for Operation Popeye, you know, in the monsoon. So you can bet that all this flooding in eastern Kentucky, there's every reason to suspect, because they want to make the rugged hillsides and creeks an asset to borrow against with the IMF and the World Bank and depopulate the coal hole economy, They've limited all these coal hole jobs, you know, coal jobs.
Yeah.
And it would link directly between the biosphere of the United Nations Smoky Mountains all the way up into Canada, western New York.
Exactly. They've been working on that corridor for a long time. And with everything
western Pennsylvania,
we're on the surface of the ground, you got to look and see what resources and minerals and things exist below the ground.
Mike,
I got to wrap up here. We're getting
sure.
up at the hour. I appreciate your call. Keep things rocking and rolling there in Kentucky, and pack away some food. We're going to need it more sooner than later. Thank you for the call. So, yeah, we're in a position where we're not going to be able to kick the can down the road. We've been doing that for a long time with our economy. All right, we were doing a lot of QEs, the quantitative easing. Well, it's now going the other way. All right, there's quantitative restrictions and contractions. Went up another 0.75%. You know, some businesses are going to go out of business now. You know, that's not something that, you know, all can absorb. That's only going to go that there's two options. You know, they can either allow hyperinflation to really just take hold and, you know, sky's the limit. Or they can start boosting the interest rates and wiping out the economy. There's not a good option. Things are going to get bumpy, much more bumpy than they are. We're just seeing the early warnings. I don't know, folks. The battle goes on. Please be persistent. Don't panic. All right? Do what you do with love in your heart. And hopefully we'll see you here again next week. RedPillPolitics.tv is the website. All right? RepublicBroadcasting.org. Check out the calendar. Hit the donate button. Show your support. All right? Fly your flags high. Keep your powder dry. Love each other out there. We'll see you next week.
Till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease Off, LLC. 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle
this
the truth.
This is the alternative media. Exposing government corruption. Defending our suspended constitution.